Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to episode 60 of the Tone Junkie podcast. My, how far we've come. Don't call it a comeback. My apologies. I recorded two episodes and both times forgot to post them. So those episodes are now stored away in the Tone Junkie vault. I might pull them out at one point. Some pretty epic episodes, though, I have to tell you. Oh, man. You're probably thinking, HW, why are you hyping episodes that you didn't upload? What's your end game here? Truth is, I haven't figured that out yet. What is the end game? Oh, my gosh. What's the end game for Tone Junkie? No idea. I don't know. Somebody call the Avengers. Maybe they know. Well, okay, listen, I apologize for the extended hiatus on the podcast. That was unintentional. I did record some episodes. I forgot to upload them. And then people started messaging me and it was on my to-do list. I've been focusing a ton on video content. But the podcast needs some love. For those of you who don't know, I'm a very creative person. And I really, really love, I really enjoy marketing and I really enjoy debate. And I guess I have the gift of gab in a way, but man, my admin skills are not that great. I procrastinate a lot, but it's funny, I'm working a ton. I'm just really working on upping my productivity so that I can get all this content out. Just started doing those hilarious comedic skits online. Are you guys watching these Tube Snob skits? They're... I'm about to upload the second one today, and the challenge involved with trying to get out, like, how do you pack a piece of, like, wisdom, like, something you want to say, also a critique, and also a caricature of the gear page in 1 minute? Well, that's been the artistic challenge, and on the first one, I did it. If you haven't watched that first one, you got to see it. I just love all the little hidden gems in it. It's like, you know, Kemper Guy and Helix Dude. These are the character names. Kemper Guy and Helix Dude just straight up chatting, you know, debate. You know, hey, it's so easy to use. Oh, yeah, easy to use. You call that screen easy to use? This is easy to use. And it's like, and then here comes Tube Snob Guy. Here comes Tube Snob Guy with his hat all wrong and just... Tube Snob Guy needs to be in a better outfit, though. I was thinking about this the other day. Tube Snob Guy in this caricature of... For those of you who haven't seen it, this is just what it is. I'm doing one-minute Insta videos. So they fit 1 minute on Instagram. I'm putting them on Facebook and YouTube as well. The one on Facebook has gone a bit viral. It's got, you know, I don't know, tens of thousands of views somehow and so many shares. The one on Insta, too, has kind of taken off. YouTube's a little slow on this one. But I basically hold a Kemper stage, face one way. I have my hat forward. That's one character called Kemper Guy. The other character, he has a helix he's holding, and he has a backwards hat. That's Helix Dude. And then we've got just straight up the Tube Snob. Tube Snob is wearing his hat in some sort of a mohawk fashion. No one really knows why. He heard it gave him better mids. And he's literally just holding a giant tube amp. He's loud, obnoxious. He doesn't listen to reason. Tone is in the fingers. All you need is a tube screamer, or better yet, you don't even need a cable, a pedal at all. It's all in the fingers. It's all in the fingers. Eddie Van Halen's Brown Sound, all from the fingers. Dark Side of the Moon, those weren't effects. It was all the fingers. He's still working on his phaser technique with his fingers. To no avail, though. Okay. So that's the premise, right? And it's always... And what I'm trying to do is pack in... How do I both make you laugh about the ridiculous things? Like, here's a gear page post come to life. Right? Like... And at the same time, present a thought-provoking idea... You know, and throw in just some sort of, you know, funny thing, funny conclusion, you know? How do you do all that in a minute? kind of those three elements. How do I say something that I think needs to be brought up, like an actual tip or an actual something that I think is valuable to know? So how do you teach? How do you mock the ridiculousness of the gear page and just that whole, and I'm saying the gear page, but I really mean that whole culture of just snobbery and I'm better than you and that's dumb and there's one way to do things and this is the proper thing, you know what I mean? And how do you fit that in a way that has like these little like comedic bits that are just so over the top, you know what I'm saying? So the first one was, you got to go watch it because it's you know, Helix guy and Kemper guy. It's Helix guy and Kemper dude just going back and forth. And they're like, you know, hey, just talking. Just, you know, they're doing their little debate thing. Well, I like the Kemper. Well, I like the Helix. And then here comes Tube Snow guy with a giant tube amp. And he just outs himself, right? He's got to out himself on that first iter in that first episode. He's got to just go, real tube tone only comes from tubes. Digital sucks. And your tone's bad. My tone is, I can only get it from tubes. And, I hate you. I'm better than you. It just outs that whole underlying tone, right? And of course, that just leaves, you know, Kemper and Helix dude like, whoa, what? And then it's like, you know, who invited that guy? Right? You've seen the skit. Okay. Go watch it if you haven't. Then at the end, Tone Snob is licking the clon. Oh, I wanted to know what hype tastes like. Right? Just really trying to capture, like, what is this culture about? It's about hype and about if you aren't doing what I'm doing. And hey, guys, here's the post of how I run things. And if you're not doing it like this, you're wrong. You know? Or a bunch of people going like, oh, this pedal's so great. And then 100 people chiming in. It's so great. It's so great. It's so great. It's so great. So that's why episode 2 deals with, which just came out. And episode 2 tries to hit at this whole, what are we really on the internet for? You know, we've got Kemper guy taking the bait. Kemper guy, Helix dude, they're out there. They're chit-chatting. And they're just talking about tone, talking about their new presets, their new IRs. And here comes Tube Snob dude. And he's going, oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Real amp in the room tone. Got to move air. Got to move air. Helix dude goes, don't even engage him. Don't take the bait. But Kemper guy can't help. Kemper guy can't help. He just has to go. So he lays down this whole, you know, piece of little wisdom about amp in the room tone versus microphones and which sound actually gets to the listener's ears, yada yada yada. Of course, this brings Tube Snob to a hilarious laughter. Just, he can't contain himself. Ha ha, you think tone comes from microphones and the front of house engineer and preamps? You think that's tone? No, man, that's not tone. Tone comes from the fingers. Microphones don't matter. Tone's all in the fingers. How you capture the sound, that doesn't matter. Tone is in the fingers. Then he, of course, reminds us that he's in a weekend blues band. They're called the Flat Thirds. Ha. Huh. And he just goes on and on. Then we get to the real point of the one-minute episode, right? You've seen the setup. You've seen this little like, yeah, I love my profiler. Yeah, I love my Helix. Then this guy just barging in. No, wrong. You got to do it this way. Little discussion ensues. Ha ha ha. Name calling, making fun of people, mockery. That's how these boards go and stuff. That's how the gear page works. And then we get to the real point of the 1 minute. Which is Helix dude going, why do you have to get him riled up like that? And Kemper guy going, I thought he could learn something. Helix dude responds, What are you talking about, man? This is the internet. No one's here to learn anything. Kemper guy is confused. Helix dude continues. This is the internet. We're all just here for self-validation. And isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? On your Instagram, on your Facebook. I mean, look, you put your best stuff out there, right? And in a lot of ways, when we're posting our gear picks, when we're reminding everyone of how great the new guitar we just bought is, that's what we're doing. We're looking for self-validation. We're looking for confirmation, bias confirmation. We want to be reminded that the outlandish purchase we just made was actually a good idea. A long time ago, maybe 20 years ago now, it might have been in the late 90s, BMW, I read this article, and I think it had happened much earlier, like in the early 90s or the 80s. BMW experimented with no longer running television ads. They kind of were sitting in the market. This is very pertinent to what to confirmation bias, to you know, just sort of the sort of confirmation bias and self-affirmation. BMW started testing the hypothesis that maybe they didn't need to run commercials because they were known as the ultimate driving machine. Radio spots were really big, right? And radio spots traditionally were where a lot of car lots and car dealers were having success bringing people in to dealerships because they're in an old car was the thought. The thought was they're in an old car listening to the radio. Let's tell them to come check out a BMW. Maybe they'll drive over. It's actually really amazing that we actually used to entertain that was how people function, but marketing's come a long way. We now have much more realistic. I think technology has actually given just human beings a much more realistic view of human beings, meaning it's very difficult to, even with the most compelling speech, it's very difficult to actually influence human behavior. People are just lazy. They're really not going to. No one's going to really turn their car around because you told them a radio spot that a sale's going on. Really, what it turns out is you have to give them a message 30 times before they sort of remember it. And then maybe when they're somewhere and they see a sign or they see a car, they'll go, you know, one day I did mean to stop by BMW. Then it's like on their list of things to do and they may one day do it. Like these are low, low percentage shots. You can't correlate, you know, a radio spot or a television commercial with actual action. Unless there's a real strong call to action, like this weekend only, a free this, then you get a bunch of people in there. It's like, I don't know what worked. Whether it's the radio ads, was it the television ads, what is it, the Facebook campaign? We don't know what worked, but we know that it was worth it to spend that money to get people in here, so let's just do that again. Anyway, back to BMW and back to why people feel the need to post about, you know, buying a Bloom or whatever. Oh my gosh, a giant bug just flew in my head. My hair. Oh, I just got reminded it is still, I'm still living in the South. Okay, sorry, I'm back. So BMW thought, what if we don't run these spots? Now listen, here's what you got to remember. BMW was running nationwide television campaigns, just promoting the idea that BMW is the ultimate driving machine and was a good purchase, was a quality purchase, was a luxury item. And that you should want one. What they knew was still, they were in a unique spot because of this. What they knew was still going to happen was that dealerships, like the local dealership in Santa Ana, California, that is a really meta hint. And I'm not going to mention that anymore, but one day in the future, I'm going to announce something. And you might go, oh, wow. HW, you drop that in there. But anyway, let's say you're in some local municipality like that, and you go, well, let's say you're in this some local municipality, and you turn on the TV, you're going to see like commercials for like, you know, Henry Dillinger Dodge, and, you know, Mike Anderton, you know, Ford, all these local dealerships are still going to run spots in their local area for a Memorial Day sale, for a big sale, right? Well, BMW knew this, so they knew they weren't going to disappear from television. There's still going to be BMW ads, but they were going to be more direct, kind of like direct response, they call them, direct response ads. Like, hey, come down to the dealership, come do something. So they tested this idea, and they stopped running ads. They stopped running those television ads. And they noticed something happened. They actually noticed that they polled potential buyers and BMW owners. And what they actually found was that when the more BMW pulled back on ads that were shown to an area, and you know that when the people came forward, they asked them, have you seen this ad? Yes, I've seen this ad. Okay, now tell us something. And then, have you seen this ad? No, I haven't seen this ad. Then take our little test. Here's what they found. Running the ads for the nationwide BMW ads that just said the BMW 300 series, the ultimate driving machine. Now with this, this, and this, the 500, the M class, all this stuff. It didn't actually result in more purchases of BMWs. It didn't. However, it had a correlation with regret, with the regret of the purchase and how confident people were in their purchase after they had made one. So what that meant was when BMW advertised how great the ultimate driving machines were, the ads were having this unintended consequence of that more recent BMW owners, like people that had bought one in the past 3 to 5 whatever years, were reminded that they were driving a luxury vehicle. They were reminded that they owned a status symbol. So by maintaining this messaging as BMWs are a status symbol, they were reminding their past customers, I have a status symbol. I feel good. I get a little bit of that feeling like when I first bought the car and showed up and I thought people were looking at, are they looking at me? Just like I feel. When I first got the Model 3, I was going, oh my gosh, everyone is staring at me. And now I don't notice that. But that was my perception, right? Like, everyone must be looking at this new model. Look at how sick this is. What? Look at this Model 3. But now I'm like, I'm just driving my car and I see a bunch of others, you know, and every now and then I see someone, like I pull up to a stoplight and there'll be people on the corner and I see them point, and they're not just pointing at the car. They're pointing because sometimes they haven't seen the inside yet. But at that moment, they're close enough to see, oh my gosh, there's like a big iPad mounted to that car and like nothing else inside. It's like blank except for a giant iPad. So it's the type of thing where, you know, you know, people are looking, but it's not like because, whoa, a Model 3. But BMW owners were being reminded, well, what did that do? So BMW just had this data at that point. And it's like, well, is that something we should worry about? And as they had this discussion internally, my understanding is they didn't test this any further. They came to the conclusion that these ads, while they don't directly drive new sales, it would be in their best interest to run the ads, okay? It would be in the best interest of BMW to run the ads, and then after they were done running the ads, or they should run the ads, not worry about new sales. But as long as BMW owners had less and less regret about purchasing a BMW, they would be less likely to sell their BMW on the used market, thus competing with new BMW sales. And even if they did sell on the used market, they will have been reminded of the status symbol that is BMW, and they will hopefully buy another BMW. So they still run television spots. What I think that shows us is that no matter what it is, human beings like being reminded that the thing they spent a lot of money on, it's still a good idea. And it has to do with this thing called the hedonic treadmill. The hedonic treadmill. Wow, we're really learning, aren't we? The hedonic treadmill is actually, I guess a guy named Hedon came up with that. I have no idea. But the hedonic treadmill has to do with the amount of happiness one receives from an action. And the hedonic treadmill is kind of like, imagine up and down, up and down, up and down, right, on this graph. And the thing is, it kind of looks like a treadmill in the way, it's hard to describe, but here's basically what the hedonic treadmill is all about. Let's say you get a new job and it pays you double or triple what your old job was paying you. Your first paycheck, you feel like a millionaire. I mean like a real millionaire. You will feel like just so incredibly wealthy and successful, right? That first check. So much joy. Next week, still so much joy. Week after, still so much joy. But it's wearing off just slightly. Now, fast forward that same person who now makes that same amount of money, right? Let's say this was your first, you were working at Starbucks, $12.50 an hour. You get out, you land an $85K a year job. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm rich, coming from the $12 an hour Starbucks thing, right? But now you go forward, $85K a year, 5 years later, you've had lifestyle creep, you've got everything, you've got a kid now, you don't feel rich anymore. Why? Because it lost its luster. We all can relate. You buy something new, it's amazing, you're in the honeymoon period, and then you're done. Now, you might still really like it, but you don't experience as much joy as opening that thing up the first time, right? The hedonic treadmill is trying to map that. The same sort of causality happens, but it doesn't matter. The joy you experience spikes, reduces slowly, spikes, reduces slowly. Then we start to see less of a spike and a quicker reduce, until eventually there's really no effect on happiness at all. And that makes so much sense, right? There were things that used to make you happy that you take for granted now. But this is true of the psychology of buying a pedal or a profile or an anything. You know, you want to be reminded. And that's really what's fueling so much of these online discussions, right? How great is the Brothers? Well, it's not great. It's not a good pedal. Maybe you like it. That's fine. Seems like there's a general consensus that one side seems to have people's favorite tones. So whenever you see a pedal and there's all this discussion on how are you setting up to get usable tones out of both sides, it's like, well, haven't we just sort of given the review right there? Haven't we said all we need to say? Like, if we can't just find usefulness on both sides, was it really that great? And then what happens is people are like, oh, I have this great tone I like. I just want to add a little more drive. So then they add in this pedal. Any pedal could do that. It's not even like, you know, it's a second gain stage. So no, of course it doesn't sound good by itself. It just doesn't do anything unique. Except for sound not... It does sound unique. It just doesn't sound good in my opinion. Anyway. But let's say that's you. Why do you need to keep talking about the Brothers? Why do I need to... There's a guy online who just had two pictures of a... He had two Klons on his board. Two real Klons. And then, you know, some Strymans or something. And it's like, look, more power to you if you enjoy those. But it's, where does the discussion go around those things? You know, there's nothing like a Klon. In that video, I'm looking at a real Klon. So I'm an idiot that has a Klon, I guess. That's a borrowed Klon. But you buy a pedal, you like it, you love it, or maybe you don't. Maybe you was so hyped. That's the other side of this. There's so much hype, but maybe it was so hyped you got it. It didn't change your life, and now you're like, well, hey guys, hey, I just got this. How are you guys using it? Right? It's like, wait. I'm a doubting Thomas. Remind me. And then all of us, like these internet Jesuses, just come and we're like, here, touch my wounds. Here, touch my clon receipt so you'll know that I too believe. I understand. So it's just a silly, it's a real interesting thing that that's what this is about. And what that tells me is this. This is the truth. This is what that tells me is this. I was in a place in my life a long time ago, and I say a long time ago, I mean probably four years ago now, where I was really faced with something. It wasn't 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I moved to Nashville. It was about two years before that, so 6 years ago. I was in a place in my life where I was a worship leader, and I was playing at a church, and I didn't realize it at the time, but so much of my identity was wrapped up in being a guitar player and wrapped up in how well I can sing, how well I can play the git fiddle. And that's a guitar, by the way. And how good this music is on a Sunday morning. And how many people, we would do these special songs at the end that were really contemplative and stuff. And people would cry. You know, they had just heard a message that talked about losing a loved one or loss or addiction or all these things. And then I'd get up there and I'd sing some song that was specially chosen to sort of be the end piece, you know? And I'd go up there and maybe it would be very contemplative or something. And you know, on an emotional day, if it was a heavy subject and the song was very slow and, you know, ballady, it'd be, people would cry. And that was sort of how I like, look, if people are having an emotional reaction, the music must be really great. I wouldn't have put it to you in those terms. I would have put it to you in very Christian terms, terms that seem more selfless and blah, blah, blah. But really inside, I was deriving my value as a person from that. I was defining who I was, and I was, my identity was wrapped up in how good is this music. I had a job. I was doing marketing and stuff, but that's really where my focus was, right? Then I had this kind of instance happen, not even an instance. I just at some point came to the realization that the church had changed a lot. I had been there since I was a child, and our community was really outside of that church. We had so many friends, and our like core community really didn't belong to this church anymore. And there was some hurt on my from my wife. There was some hurt there, some reasons why she was kind of hurt by some people there. Not the leadership or anything, just actual some people in the church. And I could just see her hesitance to really go and see people she didn't want to see, people who had just had kind of like had done a thing or two that was just so like rude and inconsiderate. And then even though they apologized, it was just like, I just really don't want to see those people, you know? So anyway, so I told my church, hey, listen, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm in a different spot. I'm going to go see what else is out there in the city. And so I went on this little journey, and when I stopped playing, I was immediately confronted with this thing, this, oh my gosh, my value's wrapped up in this, and I feel like I'm worthless because I'm not playing the guitar now. And I was feeling the need to remind people, like wherever I went, that, oh, well, I'm from this other church and blah, 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 and the music and blah, blah, blah. And you can't say that. I knew how it sounds when I would begin to say it, so I couldn't say it. But I wanted to in some way communicate my worth. I wanted to in some way them to know that I was a musician, that I was good, and that I was accomplished in some way, and that they should respect me for that. And I really started dealing with what's at the core of that, which is I'm finding my identity in music and finding my identity in what we do. And in my opinion, in my humble opinion, that is 75% of musicians I have met playing in the church. Not all of them, actually. Like my church I'm at right now, I didn't get involved right away. I really started looking around and I realized I would say many of them are not. But that's a Nashville thing. That's because if they did feel that way, they would already be when you move to Nashville, you'd be confronted with that because it'd be like, okay, then do it professionally. okay, that guy's way better than you and he's doing it professionally. That guy's it. So you can't really hide under the illusion. But when you're in whatever city you're in, Dayton, Ohio, Miami, Florida, San Francisco, California, where I was, blah, 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 the type of musicianship required is an intermediate type of musicianship that's required. And you're almost an advanced player in those scenarios. Then you move to Nashville and or LA maybe, and you know, you can't. So then church players on a Sunday morning are guys with jobs. We're guys with jobs because the guys who go on the roads and the guys who play, you know, 6 days a week, they're playing music 6 days a week, a lot of times 7 days a week, because sometimes they will volunteer at their church, but they're playing 6 days a week, right? And they do it professionally. They're not dying to get up there. So you're playing in front of dudes that are on tour with Taylor Swift, that play at Glastonbury, that are on every... I know so many dudes. Like, I literally sat down to watch a documentary two nights ago, and it was a documentary that had a lot to do with music. And I knew one of the guitar players and two of the bass players that were just in this documentary when they were talking about different bands and bands playing. And they're at festivals. They're all around the States. One, it was a guy, a local guy I know here, but he was recording in a studio in England, right? So it's, you're faced with that, right? I've played with him a bunch and I've played with all these people. And that, you know, they're it's this type of thing. It's like, yeah, I play 6 days a week. I'm not dying to get up there. If you need me to fill in, I don't mind filling in once in a while, but that's not the stage I'm after. So really, the Sunday morning stages in Nashville, it's funny. In a lot of ways, they actually belong to people who aren't professional musicians, at least I found. And so that thing can it can't exist here. You'd face it. But in other places, it exists big time. I would say 75% of the people I've met have way too much of their identity wrapped up. I mean, and by way too much, I mean way, way, way too much. Like, they have an unhealthy view of themselves and they don't realize it because they're the musician. Everyone knows them as the musician. It's that they're a musician, 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 musician. And I wonder, because this was my thing, when I stopped playing, what was my relationship then with the church? I had to figure this out. I had to figure out what it looked like to be someone who didn't show up, who didn't play music, and who wasn't thanked all the time by people, and who people weren't coming up to and having an emotional reaction and crying and going like, that song touched me so much. And it's like, well, who are you if you're not that guy? You have to figure that out. Also, the drug of being known, like when people know who you are, that's a really good feeling. Somebody recognized me at a Chick-fil-A the other day, this guy named John, and he bought me dinner, and I really appreciated it. And I bragged to my wife for the next week about it, that somebody at the Chick-fil-A knew who I was and bought me dinner. Like, it was amazing, right? Stellar, stellar, stellar. So, yeah, you know, we're all just human here. And the gear world is not different than the outside world. We now have to communicate in a different form, right? We have our identity wrapped up in being guitar player music. Now we go online and it's, let me show you my gear or let me tell you who I am. There's a guy right now, I put this skit on my Facebook page, that skit I was talking about earlier. And he's answering seriously. And I'm not going to say his name, you can go find him. But at first I'm scratching my head like, do people give serious responses? Like, he was kind of upset that I was like saying tube guys are snobby or something. Or he was like, whoa, man, wow. Well, on all the stages I played, we've never been able to get digital to sound authentic. That's not just my opinion. I've been playing music for 30 years, blah, blah, blah. As soon as anyone on the internet tries to qualify their opinion as being valuable, that's when you know, just don't listen. You've lost all credibility. When you try to establish credibility, you've lost credibility with me anyway online. Because then I just go, you're not an expert. You don't know everything. Like, music is too vast to know about. It would be like going on a fine arts like forum and being like, this is how to paint. And it'd be like, no, dude, this is a rich tradition of techniques and styles. You can't just tell people how to do it. That's not how it works. No, no, everyone, I know how to cook. These are the proper dishes. It'd be like, what about all the ethnic dishes you didn't cover? What about Indian cuisine? What about Thai cuisine? What about Malinese cuisine? What about like, you know what I mean? What about the seven traditions of food that all just come out of India? You haven't explored all that. What about like, man, Syrian food? You ever had Syrian food? Syrian food, let me tell you something. Here's what's interesting. Syrian food is like Middle Eastern food. There's a lot of Mediterranean stuff. So you're like, oh, what is this hummus and what's all this stuff? Then you get like those Arab influences, like the black currant kind of flavors. But Syria, the Silk Road also went right through Syria. So the Indians and the Chinese had been bringing their food and their recipes through Syria forever. So when you go to a Syrian restaurant, you also will see tikka masala, straight up Indian dishes. And they'll even have like Stu Jews is telling me this, like tikka masala, like a falafel. You know what I mean? Because they're just like, here's like some meat and some sauce. I'll just put that in something else that has some meat and some sauce. You know what I'm saying? You couldn't put together, I put together this book of 50 recipes. Here's how to make food. Now, that might be how to make food in a certain style. And that book certainly does exist. There's a very popular cookbook called How to Cook Everything. And it deals with fish, fowl, beef, pork. It covers everything. But here's the thing. It covers everything that a 1950s mom could have ever eaten. Like, it covers all of the stuff, European, American cuisine. And of course it has like a faux fried rice thing thrown in. Of course it has like some sort of inspired pho soup. It has something, but it doesn't have traditional dishes from all over the place. Music is the same way, man. Tone is the same way. It's all in the fingers, by the way. Come see the Flat Third Saturday night. No. So whenever people are like, I've been doing it for 30 years, it's like, listen, you're not an expert. You're not an expert. The experts that we acknowledge on the internet are people here's the experts we have on the internet. The experts we have on the internet are people who make content. Now, that's not me. Well, HW, what are you saying? You're an expert? Yeah, yes and no. I'm saying that people perceive expertise from others. And the people who have the most opportunity to demonstrate some expertise will have the most perceived expertise, right? So people think I know the most about using the Kemper. Maybe I do. Maybe Dan Lombardi does. Maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe somebody else in the Facebook Kemper group does. Like, you know what I mean? Like maybe one of the other guys that's active all the time. Maybe it's Guy or Guy. Maybe it's Guy from Germany who wrote that Kemper wiki. He seems to have every answer. He really does. He like, I think he dreams in Kemper menu pages. Like they just scroll through, right? Because if you ask me, can you do this? I'd be like, yeah, you can. I think hold system. Hang on, let me look on my Kemper. But Guy will just be like, page 6, system menu, UI to link at the top. It's just that kind of thing. So bringing this home, it's our need for validation. We need to be validated, this self-validation of, hey, let's remind each other how great we are. Where's my Kemper fam at? Where's my Helix fam at? And it's tribal. It's okay. These things are in us, whether by design or by evolution, however you interpret the world. The need for this tribalistic mentality is in us. And it's why when someone posts and I don't care what anyone says. If you're a Helix guy and you listen to this, I'm just going to call a spade a spade. The Kemper P-Dub group on Facebook is the kindest group, and I'll tell you why. Because when the HX Stomp came out or when updates for the Helix comes out, when it gets posted in the Kemper group, there is almost no bashing of the product. We all know what the product is. So when someone says, here's the HX Stomp, no one's like, it sucks. Straight up when they post the Kemper profile, it does every Helix group. even the worship one. Guys just lay into the like, why would anyone want that? Blah, blah, blah. I can't believe, why would they do this? Bad design. That screen is terrible. It's like, listen, there are groups on here with 20,000 people or you know, 15,000 people or something of fans of these units. Obviously, like, what you have is called an opinion. Like, it's not a definitive, nobody wants this. That can't be a true statement. It can't be. Not based on the data around us. But that's it. We have to feel good about what we just did. We need to be reminded. We don't always have the confidence to carry us through the ups and lows of the emotions, right? And that's because, look, emotions are real, but they're not the truth. Emotions are real, but they're not the truth. They're very real. You feel like the you know, look, you really feel like you want profiles of the JHS More Loud is Good. You feel that way. I could tell you, hey guys, I'm pretty sure this is like a 60s Bandmaster. In fact, I kind of remember Josh saying he really loved his Bandmaster amp. Then it looks like JHS, or then it looks like Milkman built him basically a 112 combo of it. I could tell you that. The thing is, though, that's not going to stop you. You're still going to go, HW, will you please get a hold of one of these amps? And my response will be sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll get a hold of one and we'll do it. And then, ones like this. Oh my gosh, just bought the new Specular Tempest. Now look, I'm not saying nothing wrong with Specular Tempest. I've heard it's a really great pedal. I'm not picking on any pedal. It happens with great pedals. Or, OMG, who still thinks the King of Tone is the best pedal ever? It's like, hey, I'm starting to, it's like, if we could really say what we're thinking, it's like, hey, I'm starting to doubt that I have the best pedal because I just watched something that made me want a different pedal. And can you just remind me that I already have the best one? Remind me that I'm already on the winning team. Emotions are real. But they aren't the truth. I'm HW. Thanks so much for listening. Like, subscribe, leave a review on the podcast if you could. Thanks. HW out.